Hello, welcome and thank you for joining us and listening to our podcast, The God Beyond the Bible. Our podcast is released weekly each Friday. The content of each episode is based on the questions and curiosities we all have about God and the Bible. Many of our topics are considered taboo in the minds of the mainstream church. You will find our discussions to be, I think, refreshing and often far from traditional. But we don't just skirt around these complex issues, but confront them head on, and not in the way you're used to hearing them discussed on typical Christian talk shows. I'm Alan Rowland, creator and host of The God Beyond the Bible. As of the launch of this podcast, I've been a pastor for more than 35 years. My co-host is my daughter, Trayson, and our engineer, co-producer is my daughter, Tabitha. Our mission is to encourage our audience, along with us, to open our minds to the reality that God is simply too big to be fully explored or experienced by the reading and studying of a single ancient work. In short, the Bible's not the sum of God, and to think this is to limit what He has done, is doing, and what He will do in our future. So with introductions made, thank you for listening, and let's dive into the topic of the day.
And welcome, seekers, to episode number 124 of the podcast God Beyond the Bible, the podcast made by seekers and for seekers. Today, we're going to revisit the topic of hell. Is it real? Is it eternal torment? But first, our shout-outs.
And our shout-outs this week are to Edmond, Oklahoma, Shepherdsville, Kentucky, and Anchorage, Alaska.
All right. Hey, everybody.
I bet it's a lot more comfortable in Anchorage right now in the middle of July than it is here in Arkansas.
Maybe, except for, don't they have a lot of mosquitoes up there when everything thaws? I mean, they have terrible.
Oh, I don't know. I can imagine,
yes,
though.
Yes, yes, Canada. I know Canada's, parts of Canada's like that. Okay, our quote. Pause and remember. The peace you seek begins with you. When you consciously and consistently choose peace in your words and actions, more peace will appear to your life. Stop blaming everything and everyone outside of you. Make peace within your priority.
I like that. Okay, so what about hell? As always, before
you say that kind of talk for church. You don't. You don't be saying that on. Don't say that on the podcast. We reserve that kind of talk for church.
Oh, before we begin the discussion, we ask you to go back in our archives and give our April of 2019 episode on hell a fresh listen. We used a lot of Bible texts and such to support our position, and due to time restrictions in our new 20-minute single segment format, we're going to merely discuss the whole concept of hell.
Our real concern with this concept of hell is the position that hell is a one-size-fits-all eternal torment and suffering for every infraction, no matter how large or small. As we said in our early episodes on this topic, this one-size-fits-all punishment means that this young teen who's heard of Christ in Bible school but didn't make a commitment to Christ in the church and died in a tragic accident before making a decision of faith receives the same punishment as a mass murderer and rapist. Is this misrepresenting the basic message of the modern organized church? Or do you think this is a frank but fair assessment of the message, guys?
No, I think that's exactly, I believe that's for a long time.
That's what we say, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and I think it was perpetuated. I know for Tabby and I, we've watched those Christian movies through the years where the teen dies in a car accident.
Before they're actually accepted Christ, yes. But they're on their way to do so, but then they go to hell.
But it was too late.
That really feeds into anxiety of young kids and stuff. I mean, it really does. There's
have I made the commitment? Is my commitment fully made? Did I do something wrong? Did I miss a step?
It's important to frame the concept this way because millions have rejected God, Christ, and religion in general for this very reason. Legitimate or not by anyone's standard, this very dogma and doctrine of the church is an issue that many just can't overlook or feel compelled to even become involved in. In fact, let's just say it. The whole church approach has really painted God in an unfavorable portrayal and image of who he really is, of his true character. Mm-hmm.
According to the biblical standard of how man should exact punishment, it is an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Many people use this text as an excuse to render maximum penalty. That's usually the death penalty. Mm-hmm. However, they seem to miss the whole point of the text. It was not to ensure that maximum penalty was pronounced over the infraction, but it was introduced as a measure to prevent over-penalizing. In other words, if someone maliciously knocks out my tooth, the maximum penalty to be evoked is to knock out one of his teeth. It did not imply that I had to knock out his tooth, but if I chose to prosecute, that was the maximum penalty.
Isn't it strange when you look at that in that concept? And I do have to thank Rob Bell for pointing mm-hmm. that out.
Yes.
When you look at that in that concept, you go, oh, wait a minute. How do we take things and turn them upside down
right.
in religion?
Well, it kind of goes with, you know, if you need that a little bit clearer in our modern standards, is this idea of you commit a crime and your sentence is, you know, the punishment for this crime is 2 to 8 years. That's kind of where that idea of an eye for an eye or a tooth for a tooth. That's the 8 years, not the 2 years.
Yeah,
you don't have to do that just to.
Yeah.
So what has all of this got to do with hell? It really has a lot to do, because hell is supposed to be a punishment for a crime committed against the Godhead or holiness. So if we believe that the Godhead's desire for man is to be fair in our exacting a punishment, why is it that we teach that the Godhead authority uses a one-size-fits-all method of punishment? Does God have one standard that he expects humanity to live by, but he doesn't adhere to that very standard himself?
Well, how do you answer that question? How do you answer that question? Let's take the whole crime and punishment thing back one more step. We're told to believe that the crime that God is holding us accountable for is actually a crime that was committed thousands of years before we even consciously existed as a human being. And we're talking about, of course, the disobedience of Adam and Eve. And our only connection to the crime is that we came to be born very distantly genetically connected to the criminal in question. Yet, we are guilty in some fashion of aiding and abetting him in his criminal pursuits. What if, as mankind, we had adopted this approach, that if your ancestry had committed any offenses, the guilt and punishment rolls down to the descendants of that person forever?
I think a lot of families would be wiped out within a few generations. I mean, honestly.
That's true. Isn't one of the main platforms of the modern organized church this very assertion? The doctrine claims that we are born the enemies of God because we are Adam's descendants. And if we had committed no other act of disobedience, this is what we would be sentenced to an eternity of torment and suffering for. I mean, is this a false representation of the church message?
As much as I would like for it to be, no.
I mean, I made this assertion many, mm-hmm. many times from the pulpit.
So, about this one-size-fits-all, eternal torment and suffering for being born concept. I mean, that's essentially what it is. Admittedly, the Bible talks a lot about hell. At least, our English translation of the text does. As we pointed out in our original episode on this topic, no less than 3 different Greek words were all translated to the English word hell, and none of these 3 words actually means eternal punishment. The most common of these was Gehenna, which was the name of the location of the city dump outside Jerusalem where the fire for consuming trash and dead carcasses was never extinguished. And it is also the word for a perpetual trash fire that was translated eternal hell. Our college taught theologians know that this word Gehenna means the trash pile, not eternal hell. Yet, they say little to nothing about the liberties taken in the translation to perpetuate this false concept.
So let's play along and say the stakes are just that high. Let's say we're born enemies of God if we do nothing at all. And that means not even do anything wrong.
Right.
Or do nothing to prevent this from happening. We're going to close our eyes and wake up in hell. Mm-hmm. Eternal. Forever. In yes. torment. So let's play along and say the stakes are just that high, that merely being born puts us on a course for eternal torment. And if we don't follow a certain prescribed formula for avoidance, eternal suffering is certain. And note that every Christian denomination says they have that right formula. But let's go on. Those are indeed high stakes, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
So if that is the deal and the stakes are just that high, why doesn't the most famous quote of Jesus, the most pivotal verse in the Bible, say so? Think about John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him shall not perish, but have eternal life.
So if the stakes are so high that those who don't know about or neglect or refuse to believe on Jesus will all spend eternity in torment and suffering, Why didn't our loving and compassionate Savior say so? Why did he say, whosoever believeth in him shall not perish, instead of, he that believeth in him shall not suffer an eternal torment at the hand of my very angry and vengeful Father?
So, if the concept of hell being eternal suffering and torment is a product of the framers of the church, through manipulation of translation and creative dogmas and doctrines, what would the motive for this be, guys?
Yeah, we all know what it is. It's fear.
It is because they need to promote their new religion with fear. In fact, as we've stated before, the Christian religion has made good use of fear to promote their organization. Think about it. Upon death, you are automatically headed for eternal torment and suffering unless you adhere to the demands of the only organization that has the formula and the power to broker the escape from this dreaded future event. And especially, I'm going to say this, in Catholicism, where you have purgatory, where you can be prayed out of this waiting place before it's too late. Oh, but wait, because in the 14 to 1500s, they had the cups, and it says every time a coin rings, a soul from purgatory springs. So you could just donate some money to the church and go ahead and spring a few people out of purgatory and do your good work without actually having to pray for them.
And
just think about that.
And I think the church, even the Catholic Church, has backed up from that so much. But they still, don't they still give absolution and stuff?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just saying and sanctioning.
Last rites are still very much a thing.
Well, Jesus talked about hell, didn't he?
Yes.
You know, the rich man and Lazarus, where the rich man died and went to hell. Jesus' illustration was consistent with an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. The rich man had opportunity to ease Lazarus' suffering, but chose to ignore his suffering. Even though he had not only the opportunity to make his life, to make life better for the poor diseased beggar, but as a rich man, he had the means. So now the roles are reversed. Lazarus is at peace, and the rich man is suffering. But nothing in this illustration even remotely suggests that the suffering of the rich man is forever. It is purely our indoctrination that makes us think he is there for eternity. Don't you think that if the rich man's suffering was forever, Jesus would have used this opportunity to warn not only the audience of his day, but to warn us of that fact?
And let's be honest, if that was his suffering, wouldn't that get a little old for Lazarus, who wasn't being punished, to have to stand there in his sight for all of eternity? Yeah.
Well, he was asleep, though. He was asleep in the bosom of Abraham in the story, which we've talked about that before. And that story was not original. Jesus was telling that for a different reason. That was a Jewish story that was very familiar to the Jews. Jesus was not the originator of that story.
Right.
Okay, let's go ahead.
The instruction of an eye for an eye in Jesus' illustration of the rich man and Lazarus are both consistent with what, almost without exception, every person who has a near-death experience tells us. They tell us they have a life review, and it is a review of how they treated others. When they brought others joy, they experienced what that felt like to the other person. And when they brought heartache and pain to another, they also felt what the other person felt in that encounter. This concept of hell is consistent with Paul's letter to the Corinthians that said, we shall all stand before the judgment seat of Christ and give an account for all that we do, whether it be good or bad.
And let me point out, Paul had experienced a near-death experience.
Yes, he had.
How could he say this with such confidence?
Right.
Because Paul, wouldn't we look at this much different if Paul had written, we will all give a life review? Mm-hmm. We will all go through a life review of how we've treated other people. And we'll feel the pain and we'll feel the joy.
And I feel like Paul was also referencing this. We use the hay, wood, and stubble.
Yeah. Well, that was the same. That was 1 Corinthians chapter 3. Yeah.
And I really feel like it was the same concept of, can you imagine having to experience these things from the other side every time you've said something mean to someone?
I think
and you have to stand there as that other person and listen to it being said.
I think if the Christian religion embraced this and taught this, people would be more careful, Christians, about the ugly things they do and say to others. I don't care if they are someone who you have rejected as the dregs of society, or you have rejected that God is against them and God is. Think of that for a moment. This is my protest. We use the Christian religion to like who we want to like.
Yes, we do.
And hate who we want to hate.
That's exactly right.
I mean, honestly, my image when I picture the judgment seat of Christ and my personal view of hell, I always think about when Jesus said that those in Sodom would be far better off than you on the day of judgment. And can you imagine that you've spent your entire life being purposefully cruel and mean to other people? And let's say you just go to sleep and you don't wake up, you die. Then you have to relive every single moment of everything you said as those people who you hurt. And you have to do it standing right there in front of Christ. And that would be...
And you know what that... I believe that judgment seat of Christ is? That's our own mind.
Mm-hmm.
Where is Christ? He's in our heart. We're doing... Most of the people that have the near-death experience life review, the only time Christ comes on the scene is to put his arm around and say, you can do this. Yeah. You'll make it. You'll make it. It's tough, but you can experience this. It's not like Christ is sitting on, see there, see what you did, see how you are, you see how why I hate you, you see right. why I can't stand the sight of you, you know, I mean, that
but
is.
But you know, because you're going to have, even if you've spent your entire life with these seeds of love and kindness everywhere you go and happiness, you're still human and you're still going to have those moments. But I feel like the more of the good you have, the easier it's going to be to get through those cringe moments of the bad, you know what I mean? Where you have to sit there and go, okay, I knew I shouldn't have said that when I said it. And
well, I think every single one of us has had an experience that you can think back on right now. And yeah. you can feel that in the pit of your stomach. Oh my gosh. I can feel how I hurt that person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's what I'm going to go ahead and say. I've said this before. That's where forgiveness comes in. If that uh-huh. person, if you go to that person, they forgive you, you're released of having to, I believe you're truly released
yeah.
of having to face that. In your life review. Are you 14?
I am. Okay. It's also consistent with Jesus' teaching when he said, when I was thirsty, you gave me drink. When I was hungry, you fed me. When I was lonely, you visited me. And when the disciples asked him, when were you thirsty and we gave you a drink or hungry or lonely? And the master replied, whatsoever you do unto the least of these, my brethren, you do it unto me. Jesus seemed to be indicating here that we will give account of how we have treated others, but he said nothing of eternal torment and suffering for all infractions, no matter how big or small, as the teaching of the modern church has us to believe.
And that's the problem I have with this whole eternal torment concept. And remember, it's God that's going to keep you alive to torment you.
Mm-hmm. And it goes right? against... Yeah. I mean, it really goes against.
You're going to keep you
teaching.
Conscious, consciously aware. No, Jesus said perish.
He did.
And yes. perish means to cease to exist. Mm-hmm. You're no longer consciously aware of anything. I believe there may be those. I don't know. But there's probably those that may cease to exist that may perish. Cease to be consciously aware that they ever existed.
Right.
Or maybe they get reincarnated and they're just consciously unaware.
That's what I was just sitting here thinking. What if that's why some of us have no memory of...
Jesus teaches karma. We don't want to call it karma, but Jesus
that's
taught
what
karma.
Yeah.
You're going to sow what
you... reap what you sow.
Yeah, you sow it, you're going to reap it. It's coming back.
That's right.
Crop will come in someday. Most of us will have one of two reactions to this take on the topic of hell. One is to close our mind and adhere to the programming of religion, or to open our minds and consider things like, the master tells us to forgive every and all infractions of others towards us. To believe in a one-size-fits-all eternal torment means that divine forgiveness is very limited and very narrow, not broad and merciful like we are told to practice. Again, as in an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, why would God give us one set of principles to live by while he practices a totally different set of principles concerning his interaction with us?
That is so true.
Well, until next time, may the grace, peace, and love of the divine be on, in, and radiate out from each of you, our fellow seekers, from all of us here at God Beyond the Bible.
Did you enjoy listening to God Beyond the Bible? Do you have an idea for an episode? Connect with us today. Visit our website at godbeyondthebible.com, all one word, or send us an email at email@godbeyondthebible.com, or you can visit us on Facebook. Just type God Beyond the Bible into the search bar.